this is Kevin Kelton of The More Perfect Union, the podcast that promises real debate without the hate. As many of our regular listeners know, sometimes we find that the most interesting conversations we have happen after we turn off the recording session for the night, and we kind of get more casual and share with each other our experiences from the week past. Well, recently, we had an after-the-show conversation about gender identification issues among teenagers today that we thought was worthy of an episode. So here's that conversation, uncut, raw, and in its entirety, about gender identification and transsexual identification among young people today.
You didn't talk about your concert, Kevin. Tell us about it.
I do want to bring it up sometime on the show, but I'll tell you briefly, as I mentioned on the show once before, my youngest, is going through a very interesting change of perspective on life, which includes having adopted a new name and now is a boy. And, he wanted to see this performer who I didn't know of until he told me about the show, and the gentleman's name is Miles McKenna. He is a famous YouTuber that has a YouTube series called The Miles Chronicles. Well, they used to be called The Amanda Chronicles until Miles also went through a transition from being a girl to being a boy. So anyways, he is a big star on YouTube. You guys probably wouldn't know that because your kids aren't old enough yet to probably follow that kind of entertainment. And he just finished a 20-city tour with two other YouTuber stars that I had never heard of before. A woman named Rebecca Black, who's a singer.
I know Rebecca Black.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard of Rebecca Black.
And
she did It's Friday.
Friday, that's right.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Friday night.
And another woman named Shannon Beveridge, who is a well-known YouTuber who is an LGBT advocate. Well, their show is pretty much a It Gets Better show. It's not so much a concert, although Rebecca Black sings some songs and they do a little bit of comedy, but it's really just a message show for those kids who, like them, are sexually awkward or going through a some kind of gender re-identification in their lives. And it was absolutely fascinating to see, because you go to this thing and you see an auditorium filled with kids who look like they're clones. And they're all the kids that would probably be the awkward kids sitting alone at their junior high or their high school lunch tables. The kids that are usually the interesting characters in movies that wear all black and have the hair cut weird or have, you know, very interesting makeup or colored hair. But they were all there, and this was the most moving thing. I got to tell you, it was one of the most moving things I've ever seen, because these kids were all seeing other people like them, possibly for the first time in their lives.
And it is lovely. I teach in the school I teach is Warren County, okay? Warren County is considered one of the most Republican areas in Ohio. It's 85% registered. And at one point, it was the top 20 Republican districts in America, okay? I mean, it is hardcore. However, it has a very strong LGBTQ organization. Okay. And what amazes me about these kids at this school, it's not a super, super large school, is yes, the parents are super GD conservative, but the most popular, I can't say the most popular, but very popular kids all belong to the LGBTQT. And a lot of the very, you know, they're very open about it. They're like, sure, these kids are gay. These kids are transitioning. A lot of kids are out. And it's much, much more accepted than mm-hmm. it was when I was in school 20 years ago. I have horror stories about the two girls that I know who, I mean, when it was announced, when people found out, and the two boys I know, boy, they had a tough time.
Yeah, well, I mean,
there's a little kid in my neighborhood, first grader, who over the summer, while at day camp in the summer, transitioned, basically started identifying as a boy, going by male pronouns and using the boys' locker room and doing swimming with the boys, and came home and told his dads about this. He was assigned female at birth to two dads. And it was basically like, okay, so at camp, I'm a boy and I'd like to continue to be a boy, which is genius. I mean, it's so brilliant of this kid to find the in-between space between school years and try this on and try it out and make it happen in a place where nobody had known him before, and then come home and announce it as fait accompli. I'm floored that a 7-year-old comes up with this. And so the dads were like, okay. And, you know, takes it to the school. And we, of course, have protocols in place for this because we're Montgomery County, Maryland.
That's and it's amazing. Just
it's just handled. And, you know, and my daughter has always, because that child presented extremely androgynous last year. And my daughter's always been like, oh, that kid's a boy. I'm like, no, just a girl who dresses like that. And no, my daughter was right the whole time.
Well, of course, you know, those are heartening stories, but as Greg pointed out, there are also other pockets of the country totally different. And, you know, in yesterday's concert, there was a kid that got up, and she has two dads, and they still don't accept this transition. They still rejected it outright. And this poor kid left the house. I don't know where the kid is living now and is looking – said she is – He is counting the days until he turns 18 and can start really transitioning, taking hormones, testosterone injections. The people on stage told the story. They said, look, we've done this show in 20 different cities now. And they talked about one city, and it was a southern state. I'm forgetting which one. It might have been Oklahoma. And they said it was really quiet. And they're doing all of their material that usually goes over so well. And they said it was just silence in the auditorium. And this one performer says, and I thought we were bombing. I just couldn't figure out why we were bombing so badly. And then she went to the side of the stage where she could look out. Cause you know, when you're in the middle of a stage and the lights are on you, you can't really see the audience. And she went to the side of the stage where she could see the audience, and they were all in tears because they had never heard the ideas that were being spoken on this stage before, that they could be who they wanted to be and that there was nothing wrong with them. There was a touching moment yesterday. We got there early. We paid for the meet and greet package, which allowed a lot of the kids, including my son, to meet the performers and get his picture taken with them beforehand. And because of the way they timed it, there was like an hour and a half between that ending and the concert starting. So we're all in this high school auditorium, and all of these kids are in there killing time. And these were kids that had never met before that were bonding and getting along like it was the eighth week of camp. And at one point, I see there's one teenager who actually didn't look like the others. She was very tall, had regular length blonde hair, actually very, very attractive, probably a 17 or an 8, well, not 18-year-old, probably a 16 or 17-year-old, but, you know, a kid that looked like she would fit in any high school in the country. And she's standing against the wall, and all of a sudden I look over and I see this kid crying. And I don't know what's going on, but I see my son and a couple of others hug her. And then they all moved in for the most touching group hug you ever saw. It was unbelievable. And the support. And it was a very emotional night. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up was not to tell that story per se, but there are real issues about what's going on in this generation now, which is actually not even millennials. I don't know what we're calling the kids that are 12 to 17, but this is a big thing. And, you know, there are parents who think, well, this is just some crazy hysterical fad that these kids are being sold a bill of goods that just change your sexuality and all of a sudden life is going to be easy again, because everybody knows that high school is hard regardless of what your sexuality is. I had a great experience with my son yesterday and a little bit more difficult conversation today. Because when you really get into it and you want to be supportive, but you also want to be true to what you really believe. And it's a very difficult area because, you know, when do you say, yes, go ahead and start getting hormones shot into your body? At 18? At 16? At 6? You know, I mean, who's making these decisions? Should psychologists and psychiatrists be driving these decisions? Because there are people that are. And the parents are going, wait a second. The parents are going, wait a second. I know my 15-year-old better than some shrink who sat and talked to him or her for 40 minutes and then prescribed hormone therapy. And this is a big issue.
It may very well be something that could be, as strange as it sounds, it could be something that is more difficult for gay and lesbian parents, because if, let's say, you have a situation, and again, if you have two male parents with a daughter, then okay, that may be different. But let's say you have two male parents with a son who thinks that he should be a daughter, who wants to transition. You know, the first thing that the parents would have to deal with is, okay, just because the first thing that they may think of, and again, I'm hetero, so I'm maybe completely spitballing here and totally wrong.
No, you're not wrong. Okay.
Is that the first thing they think is, well, wait a minute. This is, you know, our kid who could very well grow up to be a gay man who is choosing to be a woman. Is their decision to transition driven more by the hetero concern that if you desire a man, you must be a woman? Or is it something that they genuinely think that they should be female? And that may be something that for gay parents may be something that's much harder for them to deal with, because they may hear from their kid, I want to transition to the other sex, and what they may be hearing in their head is they think it's easier to be a woman than to be a gay man, or it may be easier to be a man than to be a gay woman. And you can imagine how that would really not be something that they would want to hear.
Well, and then you get the situations with two male parents, and perhaps they have an assigned female at birth child who wants to transition to male, and you start getting weird looks like, is this some weird sexual thing that you're making your girl be a boy for your own gratification? There are all kinds of complexities for every family that has to walk this path. It's not easy. It's not a direct route from A to B. And it's just, everyone is feeling their way blind. I have a friend in their 40s who's still trying to figure out what gender they are. They actually have a great t-shirt that says, my gender is bigger on the inside. And, you know, this is a person who, in the time I've known them, has been through, I don't know, 3-4 pronoun changes. I don't know what pronoun Ezra is using right now. I try not to use pronouns when I talk about my friend. So it's not easy. It's very complicated, and there's inside factors and outside factors. And the best you can do is keep loving your child and trying to make the best decisions you can for your welfare as a family.
Right. But, easier said than done when you have two.
Of course it's easier said than done. It's so I'm sitting here in Kensington, in hell adjacent Maryland, trying to give you uplifting advice. So it's so much easier said than done. But, you know, at the same time, Kevin, I know that you're doing this with your heart in the right place.
Oh, of course. Of course. Because ultimately everybody, even people, you know, we were talking about this earlier today, and even Elliot agrees. He says, look, 9 out of 10 parents want what they believe is best for their kid. It's just that what they believe is best for their kid may not believe what their kid thinks is best for them.
Right. We see that almost with every parent.
At 15 was pretty screwed up. So, you know, like, I didn't believe that homework was good for me.
Right. Exactly.
I was wrong. Right. I was wrong. So,
it's not just want what's best. There's two aspects that you have to deal with. We all want the parents not only want what's best, but they also, there's three actually, want what's best, but two, they want the child safe. And you have the hindsight to see the worst in humanity. You've grown up in, you have every fear. You've seen every prejudice. You've seen every bigoted action, and you know you want to keep them safe. So you say, I want to keep you safe. Okay. So this is the path I want you to take. This may not be the best path, but this is the path. And then I'm going to throw this one out. Also, this is the other thing. You've always had expectations.
Right.
This is where I've seen you going. These are the things that I see myself doing. When you were born, this is where I saw myself doing. And that is something else that you have to contend with. Because
you have to let go of preconceived notions of what your life was going to be like.
There's a mourning period. Right. And my friends with children with cognitive disabilities talk about the same thing, where you have to give up the hopes you had for your child because you have to completely reconfigure your expectations.
Right.
And that's legitimate. That psychological state is legitimate. And you can sit with that. Take your time to sit with that.
Right. But granted, it's a little different in the fact that you have to shift your preconceived. You'll still see grandchildren. but it may not be the way that you initially thought.
Or maybe you were never going to get grandchildren at all.
Children, right. You know, or you know. You may not walk her down in a dress.
I may be wearing your wedding day.
Or you may be wearing it. Because by that time, you may come to a decision.
Or maybe that'll just be the fashion. You don't know.
You don't know.
You may not know.
Or it may very well be that if you just have to remember what you may have thought when you were younger. I mean, I know, as you know, I remember thinking when, before James was born and before I knew what gender James was, for whatever reason, I was rooting for a daughter and I got a son instead. So if James came to me and said, you know, I would rather be Jamie and I'd rather be a woman, and I'd be like, okay, I get my daughter after all, just 15 years after I thought I would get her.
So,
We all sign up for parenthood knowing that there are just no absolutes. There are no guarantees. And, you know, you and Elliot got a road that's more difficult, but it's the road you got. So
make
the best of it.
But absolutely. Yeah. But it's fascinating.
It's not
conversations.
Cancer.
No.
The conversations are fascinating, and as one of my best friends is trans. I know several trans children, and I'm friends with a parent of a non-binary. Scouts in college now, which is appalling. And it is an interesting place. Like Scout's mom emailed me one day and said, you know, Scout wants to legally change their name. The Scout's given name is Sarah and they wanted to change it before applying to college. And I said, well, you know, if it were me, what I would say is Scout should do this themselves. They need to fill out all the paperwork and drive to the courthouse and handle it. This has to be if they're adult enough to make this decision, they have to be adult enough to make the decision and follow up on it. On the other hand, I know you as mom are thinking, is this person going to want to be known as Scout for the rest of their life? I've got to tell you, I have a friend who changed his name to Spleen legally. So this is not the weirdest thing I've heard.
but again, it's like,
this may not have been a helpful answer to my friend.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but damn.
Oh, that's no, awesome. We all laugh. It's really funny. He changed his name. It's his middle name. He changed legally to Spleen, but that's what he goes by. He's Spleen Eck. He owns a pawn shop in Massachusetts. He was a day trader in the 90s and got very wealthy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a very strange man.
Nice.
You know, and I don't think his father ever thought that he'd have to address his only begotten son as Spleen over the Thanksgiving dinner table, and yet there they are.
yep.
Yeah. My father used to have that conversation with me a lot with, I want what's best for you, and you don't understand that, and you have no concept of what's best for you right now because you don't have you don't know where I am.
And here's the thing: is sometimes the parent is wrong, and sometimes the parent is right.
Right, because
you know
he wanted me to have a business degree. I remember that, but he used to always talk about my racist father. He used to always talk about if my sisters brought home a black man. He used to say he would just throw a fit because he would say, what if they had kids together? The terrible trials these they would go through. He'd go, I only want what's best for them. And in today's society, they would never get a fair shake. And I'd say, you know, that's not true. No one gives a shit but you. But he'd say, I only want what's best for them. And he was wrong. He was completely ass wrong. But we do live in Southwest Ohio, really close to Kentucky, and they would face trials.
Well, look, there's so many ways to look at this. Listen, there's the whole vaccination issue. There are parents that genuinely believe vaccinations do more harm than good. Do they right. have the right? A lot of us would say no because it has a larger effect on society if their kids right. don't get vaccinated and they could potentially bring polio or something else into the classroom. There are parents who won't allow their children to have surgeries because of their religion. I think we would probably all agree that that's wrong, that you want to take advantage of the best of modern medicine. Then again, there are kids who are 16 and 17 who are abusing drugs, and the parents say, Billy, don't do that. It will screw up your perspective for the rest of your life, or you could get hooked. And the kids laugh at them and say, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, in that regard, generally, I think the three or four of us would probably agree that the parents are probably right, you know? Yeah. So this is a new area, and, you know, I don't know whether we've figured it out yet. You know, in 40 years or in 60 years, we will have enough sample size to have a sense of where this is going. But, you know, right now, I'm still wrapping my head around, you know, at what age do you say to somebody, sure, shoot hormones into your body. Let's see what happens. Maybe you will be happier. You know, maybe you weren't meant to have a vagina. Maybe you were meant to have a penis. I don't know the answer to this, you know, but when do you stop parenting? Because at a certain point you have a responsibility too. And when do you give up that responsibility? Just because your kid says I'll be okay?
Well, I mean,
Greg, you have what, a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old?
I have an almost 12-year-old.
Okay,
and
almost 12-year-old.
And an 8.
Okay, what if your 12-year-old said, Dad, I'm going to take the bus into town. Don't worry, I'll be fine.
He says shit like that all the time to me.
Would you do it? Would you let it happen?
No.
What? Why not? She might be fine.
She, you know, and she is ridiculously responsible.
Right.
But no.
That's the point. At what point are you being a responsible parent? And at what point are you being an irresponsible parent? And at what point are you just rolling the dice?
Right.
Well, you're rolling the dice the moment you decide to have sex without protection.
That's a good point.
When the dice roll happens.
That's a good point.
Oh, yeah. Are you trying to transition to my abstinence-based sex ed program at my school?
Right.
Yeah, I'm telling you got to find Our Whole Lives program at a Unitarian University.
I'm so pissed off about that. So we have a school board election this year, and I've already tried to get a hold of all the candidates, and I'm like, hey, because the principal has already said, look, this is above my pay grade. I have nothing to do with this. This is who we are. He's actually sent us, he's like, look, here it is. Here is the script for the movie we're showing. If you want to look at it, if it bothers you. My wife worked for the CDC in the 90s as a, as a HIV educator. She would go on the streets and whatnot. And she was like, you know, this will kill kids. This will absolutely, abstinence-based kills kids. And she goes, I am more than happy to come in and do an action. He goes, like, you can't. It's our. And he goes, this is above my pay grade. I'm so fucking so.
Is it abstinence first or abstinence only?
Abstinence only. It actually says at one point, if you have sex, there's a line that says, if you have sex, you will die.
Oh my God, that was a joke in Mean Girls the Musical. I thought Tina Fey wrote that.
It actually says that. I absolutely shit myself. I absolutely shit myself. If you have sex, you will die. I'm like, are you guys fucking kidding me?
Most people do have sex and also die.
Yes. So now horny kids all over Southwest in Ohio will simply say they're suicidal and everything's okay.
Yeah, yes. I'm like, let's do the suicide pact, baby, you and me. You know, I've already told them. My wife's like, do you want to write this letter or do you want me to? I said, my letter's going to be short and quick. It's going to be like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. My daughter's not going to this. She goes, okay, I'll write the letter. I mean, I'm so red hot pissed about this. I can't even see straight. They're like, why don't you run for school board? I was like, one, yeah. A Democrat can't win in Loveland. And two,
especially
I've got
a pro-sex head Democrat.
My whole basis of my campaign is, yeah, I want to teach your kids about condoms. And two, I've got too many episodes of More Perfect Union under my belt.
If you want really good sex ed for your kids, the Unitarian Universalists have a fantastic program. I know this for a fact because I took it when I was 12 and my mother now teaches it.
We'll do fine. I'll do better than my father did for me. Trust me. And
right. But the beauty of this is it's, you know, it's many weeks long and it's somebody who isn't you.
How long does it take? Many weeks?
Sure, because it discusses things like social media and posting nude selfies and sexual harassment.
Oh,
it's an extensive. It's not just.
We've talked about that since she was like 9 or 10.
Oh God, when you talk about consent, at least once a day. You may not touch your brother if he's telling you to stop.
And do you know how bad it is? When I teach private saxophone lessons, okay, if I'm in a room with someone, and granted the rooms have windows, so if I'm in one chair and a student's on another chair, male or female, and whether they're like a 12th grader or like an 8th grader, before I do anything, I'll say, all right, would it be okay if I touch your saxophone now? Mm-hmm. And they go, okay. And then I'll go, I'll say, I need to touch your finger at this point to readjust it. And they go, oh, okay. And they're always shocked at that. But I never do anything or come near them without
asking. What? Neither does my gynecologist. So you're in good company.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to put that as my next job.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
So let's wrap this up with something kind of light. Now, as I said before, this is our last podcast before Christmas. But I wanted to find out from you guys, have you ever gotten like a really cool politically themed gift, something from a campaign or because you were on a campaign or just because somebody knew you were into politics? Greg, anything like that?
I get people in my family sometimes will get me gifts, and I've gotten pins from different campaigns, and I've gotten people who will go to conventions will pick me up things and autograph books and things like that. But by far the coolest thing I ever got, my brother-in-law, David, got me a phone from the 1996 Democratic convention. And at first it looks just like a regular phone and it's got a couple stickers, but on the cord it says DNC, 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 DNC. It's my favorite phone, and it's the only like actual old-timey phone. I keep it in my kitchen. It's very Democratic. I tell everyone who uses it, well, you're a Democrat now. It's awesome.
Okay. DJ, what about you?
My father-in-law actually gave me a Virginians for Reagan 84 pin. And while I am now a conservative Democrat, I still admire the late President Reagan a great deal. So I enjoyed that that gift.
Cool. Rebecca?
On a more sentimental note, we've been collecting Christmas ornaments from the White House Historical Society since 2007. Oh. And those are beautiful. They commemorate past presidencies. So it's not like I'm about to get a Donald Trump one this year. They're lovely. They have artists design them. They're often three-dimensional with one lights up. And they're just the prettiest thing you've ever seen, and they sort of take you back to old Washington, very old Washington in some cases.
Well, mine is going to be a little bit more dramatic than yours. Because I mentioned this actually on the show when I got it. This was August of 2016, before the election. And my kids, wanting to give their dad something they thought I would love, and my kids also having my sense of humor, went out and bought me an adult Hillary Clinton blow-up doll. And what
I said, I remember
adult,
that.
I remember this now.
This was adult. And it went back to the store a week later, unopened, still in its original cellophane. But that was a gift that I got. And I love my kids for thinking like that.
Well, my husband came back from the convention last year with creepy Hillary for me. This is a stuffed Hillary doll. Maybe we can put a picture of it on the blog. That she, it's sort of horrifying.
It is sort of horrifying.
But it sits on my desk and reminds me of what might have been.
You know, actually, in the news this week, there was a story I think you guys probably heard about where one of the cast members of SNL, Pete Davidson, got a Hillary Clinton tattoo. Did you hear about that?
I did. It was a nice one too. It was young Hillary, but it was also on his calf, and it was quite large.
Yeah.
And she responded in a very funny way. She did you see the response?
Twitter. What did she write?
She said, "She says that's really funny because I have a Pete Davidson tattoo."
Yeah.
You know, how great would it have been to have a president with a sense of humor?
Yeah. But it's interesting, you know, obviously it's just one person who did one small and maybe kind of kooky thing. But I wonder whether it speaks to a larger issue of that Hillary Clinton may be on the verge of having a little bit of a comeback
in
the populace. I think that things have gotten as bad as they can for her image. And I have a feeling, much as Mitt Romney, you know, came back and is now sort of like an elder statesman of the Republican Party. You know, Hillary Clinton is never running for office again. No, she's not running in 2020. No, if Donald Trump and Mike Pence both get impeached, she's not going to be named president. But I do think that in her days to come, she will see a less hostile version of her that most people have than maybe they had right after the election, when the people that didn't like her before the election said, "You see, that proves it." And the people who did vote for her felt that she let us down. I think that she's gonna come back. I don't know why, but
I don't know. I'm very skeptical of that idea. Mitt Romney, his loss was so dignified, and there were no questions about it, and his supporters don't have any bitterness, and his detractors also don't have any bitterness. And I think that's allowed him to rise above and continue to be a commentator. George W. Bush, I think he really only shines by comparison. I don't know that, you know, I think he'd be very happily painting pictures of his dog, except that there have been moments where it's been opportune for him to comment on "this is not my Republican Party" kind of stuff. So I don't know. I'm not sure Hillary's book was a good idea this year. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it, so I don't know. But I understand why she needed to purge all that out of her system. So I'll be curious what she ends up doing. I think she'll fall back on sort of Clinton Global Initiative stuff and do things for women and girls around the world, and maybe not have such a U.S. focus. I don't think it would be wise of her to try and become a campaign surrogate in 2018. I think that would be a very poor idea. So if we do see a resurgence in Hillary, it will be for non-U.S. policy stuff.
She, you know, the thing is, one, if I was to get a political tattoo, it wouldn't be her. Two, I'll tell you who I would get in a moment. But two, she will always be an albatross for the Democratic Party for years to come. And Trump knows it. Trump uses her at every excuse. Most of the people who voted for Trump use her as the excuse as, "Well, I couldn't vote for her, so I had to vote for him." And still to this day, he uses the, "Well, at least I'm not Hillary." At least. And that is why he's what's his latest popularity? It's like 76% on the Republican side because he keeps, and she's not running. She's not an official. And he still uses that, hey, I'm not Hillary line. She was on trial for 3 years. And when I say trial, literally, maybe 5 years. And her name has been destroyed. I think she will be the albatross around our necks for years, as long as
worse, Donald Trump... Worse than continue. Michael Dukakis?
Oh, that's actually my tattoo.
Oh!
It was going to be him with the big ears, except his tank would be, like, all buff and be the one where he's pointing. It'd be, like, him in this giant tank. It would be either that or, like, Howard Dean, like, screaming, like, aah! And stuff like that. But, yeah, it would be one of those two. Yeah. Yeah. So
it has to be a person. It can't be a quote.
It could be a quote.
Because there's my favorite FDR quote. It's not about how we enrich those who have much, but how we help those who have very little. Or I'm getting it wrong for my favorite quote. So something like that, okay. I would like. But I mean, if it had to be a person, probably Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good one. I didn't think of that.
You know, the brains behind the power, because she's the one who really drew her husband into the idea of service.
Yeah.
Not even public service, just service to others, taking care of the less fortunate.
Okay. DJ, I know that you're not a tattoo person, but if you had to pick some kind of a politically oriented tattoo, can you think of one?
And don't say Michael Dukakis, because I just got that.
No, not Michael Dukakis. I cannot think of any politician.
Oh wait, hold on. I got it for you. It would be perhaps sexy Margaret Thatcher.
No.
Except she'd call her, and she'd say something like, "Call me Maggie."
I cannot think of any politician who I would want to see when I shower in the morning, and
that's why you put them on your back,
and that would just be weird.
Yeah, Roger Stone has Nixon on his back, doesn't he?
How do you know that?
I think it's... Are you kidding? I think it's all over the news. He's got a huge Nixon tattoo on his back.
Seriously? Huge.
Yes, seriously. Google it. I'm serious.
I'm good. If you hear typing, that's me typing.
Okay.
Yeah. Roger
The fact that Roger Stone has a Nixon tramp stamp is not going to encourage me to get a tattoo. Sorry.
Okay. On Google, it says Roger Stone tattoo as the second thing. So... Yes, he's got a giant Nixon tattoo on the back.
Everybody, that's your assignment for the week. We want you to go out and Google Roger Stone tattoo and see what image comes up.
Oh my gosh, it's frightening.
Okay, so parting words going into Christmas Eve and the Merry New Year. What do you have to say to our listeners?
All right. It's got to be the year of getting out the vote. When Democrats show up, Democrats win. When Democrats don't show up, Democrats lose. So make it your mission to get at least two people who might otherwise sit out a midterm out to the polls in November.
Great.
2018 is going to be the year we take everything back. We're going to take back the Senate. We're going to take back Congress. We're going to take back local, and we're going to take back dog catcher. Our local dog catcher's garbage. All he does is sit around waiting for those fat lobbyists from the leash lobby. Oh, trash. Hope, people. Hope.